Members, we're going to get started. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the 2010 legislative session. This will be the first committee hearing of the K-12 Policy Committee, and I suspect we'll have a number of members that will dribble in as they fight the traffic here in the metro area. Of course, I live so far away, 10 minutes walking, that it was tough getting here this morning. Welcome back. I'm looking forward to a good session today with you all. Today's agenda, we're basically just going to have a very informal agenda where we're going to interact with one another as committee members, but also with a number of different stakeholders out in the community that we're familiar with, who come and work with us to develop good education policy in the state of Minnesota. So we have a long list of those folks that we want to have them come up, and this isn't meant to be a long, deep discussion with any one of them as much as it is to have them highlight for us what they're thinking and what they're hoping that we'll prioritize this year, what's important to them. And many of them we will see again through the course of the next several weeks. The chair did prepare a memo for you all. Hopefully you received that ahead of time. There's also a copy of it in the packet. I'll go over it very briefly. It's just sharing my thoughts in terms of what I think are some of our upcoming challenges and possible work that lies ahead of us. We only have 5 weeks, I believe, until our first committee deadline, and so us policy committees are particularly challenged to really cram in up front in the session a lot of work that's very important, and then we're supposed to kind of fizzle off into the sunset and handle our work over to other committees. So there's a lot of pressure for us to really kind of do almost like the end of session work at the beginning of session in policy committee. So all that by way of saying that the chair is hoping to be very efficient and move very, quite frankly, rapidly through the next 5 weeks. As you all know, in the past we've done evening meetings to compensate when things get backed up, and we've also added days. I will try not to do that, but we'll see how that goes. But what it also means is that while we are together, there's that tension about making sure we have really decent discussion with one another, but also being able to move quickly as possible through agendas. And so I would ask all members to keep that in mind, and particularly keep that in mind is if you have bills and testifiers, so that you can help the chair reinforce for folks our need to be efficient and quick. Otherwise, I'm just a bad guy, which, of course, I'm willing to play anytime. So if I need to do that, fine. We're going to start. I'll come back to my memo a little bit later, but we're going to start. I'm not going to go by order here, so I'm just going to call up members or individuals that are out in the audience and have them come forward. And I think I saw Jan go by. Is Jan Allswager? Jan, are you ready? Would you mind coming forward? If you're not, I can call on someone else. That's quite all right. You're sorting through. That's quite all right. Bob Waddell from Education Evolving. Oh, Ted's here. Ted can pinch hit. Chamber of Commerce, Cecilia Rattel. You ready to go?
I am.
Wonderful. Come forward. And you're new to this committee, so it's probably appropriate that we start with you so you can introduce us. Yourselves to us and tell us a little bit about you as well as the chamber. Everyone else knows everyone else, so we'll give you an extra minute or two. So good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Cecilia Rattel from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I am new to, I've been in Minnesota now for a year, but I am new to lobbying, and my background's in law, and I have a master's in education, and I became a part of the Minnesota I passed the bar this past summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And Representative Mariani came to our class this past fall, so I've had some chance to talk with him and work with him some.
And she still took the job to lobbying, even though. So. Well, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
And I look forward to working with you. We've had very good interactions with the chamber over the last few years, and look forward to continuing to have that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cecilia Rattel with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank you all for having me this morning. This past, or earlier this year, we did support the Race to the Top application from the state, and with looking at the application requirements, we used that a lot to focus on our areas of reform that we'd like the state to work on this session. First off, the alternative teacher certification. We believe that this is one way of addressing and closing the achievement gap. And demographics show that the workforce and the numbers of the workforce will continue to get smaller in the future, and we need to ensure that we're not leaving a large portion of the population behind. We'd like to have the most qualified teacher in every classroom and not just the traditional four-year degree people. Second, we want to continue to hold teachers and students accountable, and we want a Minnesota diploma to mean the same thing, whether you're receiving that from a Minneapolis or Owatonna or Three River Falls High School. So those are going to be our main focus for this session, and I look forward to working with all of you, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks I'll get a chance to meet with all of you.
Wonderful, and I do hope that you'll be able to do that, and also with other representatives out in the audience, to the degree that we can interact prior to our committee meetings, the more quality time we'll spend making decisions here. So I look forward to working with you. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Very well. And I think I had called out, not called out, but I mentioned Robert Woodell's name, and Ted ran off to get him. So while he comes up, I'm going to officially convene us, because I'm told that we are now at a quorum. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Bob Wadle. I'm with the group Education Evolving. Thank you for braving our beautiful Minnesota winter and coming to have this good discussion. I did give your staff a copy of the handout that I'll be speaking from this morning. just a few basic facts. I'm sure we're all aware of some of these facts, but in the flat world, when we say our goal is to educate all students, this time we have to really mean it. This is not a practice round. This time we really have to educate all of our children, but I think we need to be cautious that does not mean everybody educated to the same level on the same standards. That was the 20th century model. And we need to move beyond that. Second is that we do an outstanding job at educating many of our students, and Minnesota schools should take great pride in that. And you as policy leaders should take great pride in the policy direction. But sometimes there are some students who are doing just fine. They're doing just fine. But in a new and different model of school, they would fly. And that's sometimes the hidden group that we don't think much about. The kids that could fly if they were in a different and new kind of school that looks very much like their world. And then, of course, there are those kids that are not successful and do need different kinds of schools so that they can be successful. We think in Education Evolving that the key is for the future is individualization. We've tried to do this in the past. We really think we can do this much better now. And technology, fortunately, is the driving force. And in some cases in the past, technology has been the teacher's helper and the teacher's aid. In the future, for some kids, technology is the teacher. And we need to take advantage of that opportunity wherever we can. And fourth is that children, although they look very much like we did when we were young, they're not anywhere near like us. They're much different. Their world is so different than the one that we remember. And we need to remember that our schools need to be like their world. Some realities, as you know far better than I, the revenue picture isn't getting better, it's getting worse. The federal stimulus money is one time. It might be a little bit more in the next go round, but as you well know, you use the federal stimulus in the current biennium. District boards cannot cut budgets anymore. There isn't anything to cut. And plus, we're using their surplus money to make state aid payments for other things. So our current model of education, especially at our high schools, cannot be sustained by our current finance model. It can't. It isn't. We've demonstrated, even when you give schools increases, there's still cuts. The current model of school, especially high schools, cannot be sustained with our current finance model. We really need to start new kinds of schools. And so what not to do? Don't circle the wagons and protect and hunker down and protect what we have. That's one of the worst things we could do. We've got to move forward. Second is we cannot behave like the auto industry. You know, make it try to prevent other innovations from happening to make them buy our cars. We saw how well that worked. And resist the notion to make students come to our school. Schools have no students. Schools have no students. Only families have students. Only families have children. And those families will decide where it is that they will send their children to school. So the options on the second page of my hand. On the short term, you can tax to get more money. And I think you've got a person over across the street that says we're not going to do that. Or you can cut. And I think those are the two options you have. Tax or cut or some combination for the short term. In the long term, you can grow. We want to grow the economy. But in the lower quadrant is the redesign. And education evolving would really urge that we look at redesigning as a way to address the significant needs that we have. Innovation, embrace innovation. So a few ideas. One is recognize, yes, we have to use the continuous improvement model with our current schools. Yes, get better, work to get better. But we use kind of a split screen analogy. On one hand, use the continuous improvement model to improve what we have, but in the other screen, be willing to start significantly new and different kinds of schools that are efficient and effective in terms of student outcomes. And also, be cautious when you hear somebody saying, yes, but our new schools have got to be research-based. Innovation is not research-based. That's why it's called innovation. One of the biggest disappointments in the race to the top was everything had to be research-based. Well, that's good if you're in the continuous improvement model, but if you're in the new model, Henry Ford didn't have a research base, and he was not trying to build a better horse. He was doing things differently. And so while new has to have a sound set of hypotheses, it won't have a research base. It is developing the research base for the future. In order to do this, to provide leadership for innovation, education evolving is suggesting that you really need to create a new kind of state leadership model. And there are any number of examples out there where you have already done that. The MELF, Minnesota Early Literacy Foundation, was a new way to provide leadership for early childhood education. You provided lots of direction to it, but was outside of government. It raised its own money. It is working very efficiently with child care, with other pre-K programs, etc. So we need that kind of model, given direction from you, but outside of government, to lead the innovation in the future. And we're working with some of your members to bring forward a bill which will do that. Last year, the bill that we reviewed with you was called the New Schools Minnesota Bill. We're bringing a similar bill back based on the results of a of an innovative schools advisory council that you put into law in the last session, and they have done excellent work and made recommendations to you. So create a new model of state leadership for innovation. And then one other recommendation that we're going to be working with the, some of your members on is...
And I'm sorry, Mr. Whedon, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay, it's the final point, is to create administrative efficiencies and instructional efficiencies, especially in rural Minnesota, to put into place a process for school districts to get together, to work together, to create administrative efficiencies, not only in schools, but in cities and counties and libraries and Head Starts as well. So, Mr. Chair and members, those are some of the recommendations that we have and that we look forward to be working with you on.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. I know that there are a couple of bills that are being drafted on some of the points that you raised. I look forward to seeing those bills and having a good discussion with them. And I also want to extend my appreciation to the Education Evolving for kind of pushing us to think differently. And as I had exchanged some messages with Mr. Johnson, I think it was just recently, I'm often challenged with that, but that's okay. I think it's appropriate to do so. And I think that the emphasis of having sound set of hypotheses is exactly what a group like or a committee like this needs to pay attention to. Obviously, the chair has increasingly wanted this committee to be definitely guided by sound research and its policy development. At the same time, I want to make sure that we're properly and responsibly looking at new ideas and finding good objective ways to balance those out, so or to measure those in terms of whether they deserve the public support or not. So I look forward to working with you this year, and hopefully you, as well as others, will be able to make the rounds with the committee members in the coming weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Let me do this very quickly. Members, we have two new pages with us this year, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time in case I mispronounce the names. I'll start with the easy one first, Andrew Lee. Andrew, welcome. Look forward to working with you. Why don't you tell us very quickly a little bit about who you are, where you come from, and what's happening? Wonderful. Thank you for being with us this year. And then we also have Margot Beeging. How did I do, Margot?
You did just great.
Oh, thank you. The pressure was there.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I just graduated from St. Ben's with a degree in education and political science. And I am originally from Stillwater. So.
Wonderful. And my understanding, are your parents teachers as well? Or?
My mom is.
Your mom is. Okay, so we have the products of teachers here, folks. So we know that'll be a good high quality. So welcome. Look forward to working with you this year. And then Representative Abler, you had a brief comment or something. Someone
no,
passed me a note.
Just
you're just saying hello. Good morning.
Well, I just to discuss the point, but I'll just listen.
Yeah. We have a long list. So I really want to just kind of get through it, but we'll see how we do toward the end. You're a good listener, Representative Abler. Okay, so I'm going to continue my terroristic tactics of just sort of going through the list at no order, so scaring the heck out of folks in the audience in terms of who's going to come up next. And since Mr. Bartholomew is standing up, I'm going to call on Jim to come forward here. Mr. Bartholomew. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Well, teach me to talk Green Bay Packers in committee.
Oh, in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And with the short time, I'll just highlight three priorities for the partnership this year. But want to assure if there's anything that you and individual members are working on that we can be helpful with, as you go through the myriad of issues this year, please let us know. We'll be helpful in any way that we can. First, I just wanted to highlight that we've continued our work on the Minnesota's Future Initiative. that we began last year with a presentation, I think, before your committee that involves us, the Itasca Project, the Minnesota Chamber, and the Bush Foundation. As you may recall, McKinsey & Company did an evaluation for us that compared Minnesota's K-12 system with some of the top-performing systems internationally. And the goal was to look at what those systems do, what are some things that Minnesota can do if we work on them over the long term to help ensure our students have world-class educational opportunities. And based on McKinsey's recommendations, the four areas we've been focusing on are recruiting top talent to the teaching profession, reforming teacher preparation, developing school leadership capacity, and using student data systems to improve instruction and practices. Second priority, and in part based on McKinsey's work and the Minnesota's Future Initiative, is we want to work with you this year again to pass alternative teacher licensure. And the primary goal of this, as you can tell from the Futures Initiative, is we want to create as deep a pool as possible of well-qualified individuals for our school districts to be able to hire from. And this is going to be especially important as the current teaching force is starting to retire. And again, it's the goal of this is to create as deep a talent pool as possible for our schools to select from. And then finally, the third priority for this session is we look forward to working with you as you consider strategies to replace the grad assessments. As you know from last session, we believe the grad provides a uniform standards-based strategy for ensuring that all graduates have achieved a certain level of knowledge before they move on to a career or college. And by college, I mean 2 or 4 year, not just the 4 year. While Minnesota has done a good job with our high higher ed participation rates, our real challenge is making sure all our students are well prepared for success in higher education. And there are lots of numbers, and there's lots of numbers that talk about Minnesota's success, and certainly we've had those. But just as an example of the work we still have yet to do, in 2008, 34% of our white students scored at the college-ready level on the ACT tests, 34, yet only 5% of our African-American students were scoring at the college-ready level, 5%. So clearly, we need to raise the achievement levels of all students, but we also have to really focus on closing the achievement gap. And we'll do whatever we can to work with you to accomplish those goals. And specifically for this session, if we can work on alternative teacher licensure and developing rigorous expectations for a high school diploma and helping ensure all kids get there, look forward to that. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. I had the pleasure of interacting with you repeatedly throughout the interim as we participated in the task force that was mandated and put together, and therefore put together at the Department of Ed to look at alternative to the grad assessment. I thought it was a very good process, and I'm looking forward to those recommendations coming forward, I believe, by the end of this month. So look forward to working with you on that issue.
Thank you.
Very well. Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. Good morning. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. And I'm going to start out just a little differently with some of the information that we have put together in response to Race to the Top. And it is, some of these, of course, are funding proposals, and you might say, wow, are you going to get that money? But, you know, nothing happens right away, does it? And so we're looking at this in the bigger picture about what is good for kids. And, you know, we want to be certain that the federal money doesn't go to more government bureaucracy and make sure that the money gets to the classroom where we can really help the achievement gap. So Education Minnesota wanted to address the four reform areas in Race to the Top. And in doing that, the plan that we put together, and again, I will say, it does cost money, but we are going to promote it because we do believe that these are components that will help students. We believe that we do need smaller class sizes. You know that in some of your districts, you've got class sizes of 35 and 40. Some of those are even in elementary grades. We do believe that we should look at longer school days, longer school years, different schedules that meet students' needs. We should have enhanced professional development where we have time for teachers to collaborate, to discuss the student data, to make decisions about that, and then training as needed. We would like to see a grow-your-own system where we recruit and train teachers in schools that want to become principals. We should have more outreach to families, possibly more home visits by teachers, or transportation for parents to attend conferences, and a variety of community services located right inside the school building. There is no one governance model for centers of teachers for excellence, but we think it's essential to involve teachers and principals in this process. You know, it's often we get people who have done research or think about policy, and they come and tell us ideas about what works in our schools. And lately I have been talking to people more and more about, if we're going to be changing schools and improving student achievement, I'm going to challenge all of you and everybody in this room that if you're trying to put a new proposal together, please include the people who are closest to the kids. Because so often people come up with big ideas, great ideas, and our teachers are not in the process. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about Race to the Top and your role in Race to the Top. I said in another committee, so I'll keep this much more brief, that you as legislators debate legislative proposals, education policy, to no end. You are always... if there is one issue, it goes through possibly two or three committees. You debate that issue from 15 minutes to 10 hours in committees, and then again it's debated on the floor, and you have healthy debates about it. What we have seen with Race to the Top is the executive branch, through a political appointee, has come up with a plan, and this plan has not been debated by you. And I think the question is, and what your job is in this education committee, one of your jobs is to oversee what is happening in education policy and what's happening with the federal monies that are coming in and the policies that are implemented in place. And why are school districts signing on to Race to the Top? Have a conversation one-on-one with your superintendent and ask why they signed it. Did they sign it because it's sound educational policy? Or did they sign it because they're going to get some money? Ask that question and see what you get for an answer. And if the answer is for money, then this education policy committee should be asking, what am I going to do about it? I would guess most of them are saying it's for the money, not the policy. There are some issues that we are concerned about that we would ask you to think about it through this filter. When you see some of these Race to the Top proposals, we would ask you to say, is it consistent with the intent of the policy of the statute that it represents? In other words, if you see, if in the Race to the Top proposal there is some information or policy related to evaluation, ask yourself, is this what is intended by current law? I'm going to throw out one that's going to surprise you right now. And that is with Race to the Top. If you look at the probationary teachers, we believe that in the Race to the Top, the probationary teacher must only pass the measure of effectiveness, the measures of effectiveness. And then they are granted continuing contractor tenure. Is that the intent of the law? We believe that the superintendents are probably patting me on the back right now, we believe that the intent of the law is that they get to make that decision whether that person is able to pass probationary status. Now, why is Education Minnesota saying that here today? Because I am asking you the question about consistency, about intent of the statute. And is policy being established by another branch of government, which you should be overseeing, that is contrary to the intent of the law? Now, I could give you a whole list of other things that we think that do not fit with the law, but I'm giving you one that is more stark because it's one that I might not, you wouldn't think that I would say. There is teacher evaluation, there is professional development, licensure is a huge one. We think that we already have an alternative licensure statute that requires higher ed input. And so if the Board of Teaching then goes to another process without higher ed, then what does that mean? And it's more than just that simple statement. There is a lot more that I could say today, Mr. Chair, but I know you have a number of people speaking, and rather than getting into the specifics of all the Race to the Top proposal, I really ask you to think about, again, in summary, your role as elected officials who are to oversee education policy and to make sure the policy that is implemented, whether it comes from the federal government or the state, is something that fits and is consistent with the intent of Minnesota law that you and your predecessors have debated forever. And I will leave it at that, and if you have questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. And you indeed have identified what the chair will later very quickly also identify as an important function for this committee in the short period of time that we'll be officially meeting over the next several weeks. It is indeed the design, by design of the federal government, that the legislature was cut out of the process, all across the nation. State legislators were cut out of the process of determining the impact, the interaction between federal funds and expectations and longstanding state education policies. K-12 education, of course, in this nation is delivered at the state local level and resourced at the state and local level. I actually appreciate the challenge of the federal government, but I also am not, I'm also a very parochial, jealous state legislator who feels very strongly that Minnesota education policy should be determined by Minnesotans first and foremost. And so we will have, we'll be structuring hearings over the course of the next several weeks, and hopefully at Minnesota will participate fully, and we'll get a little bit deeper into identifying possible areas of conflict or at least areas where we should be raising questions relative to the R2T proposal. Having said that, I was a supporter of the R2T proposal, so I just want to be very clear for members where I have stood on this issue, but it was a support issue with some strong qualifications, and one of them being making sure that R2T does not de facto undo state statutory direction without our involvement in it. So thank you for that challenge. Look forward to working with you. We're going to do something a little bit, I guess the next group will be a little bit unusual. Representative Norton has made it possible for some of her constituents to come and participate. Hopefully, we'll see how the weather. Do we have Minnesota Science Teacher Association, Lee Schmidt and Chuck Hanlon here? Wonderful. Why don't you come forward? We originally had you at the very top of the agenda, but I knew that with the weather, we'd have a number of members not here in time, and I wanted to make sure that your testimony, particularly as you were traveling longer distance, arguably, than anyone else, that we had maximum exposure to the committee members for your testimony. And I'm wondering if perhaps Representative Norton, if you would like to say any prefacing comments here at this point?
Well, just that my constituent couldn't get here due to the weather.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Very good. Okay. Nonetheless, your hands are all, your fingerprints are all over this testimony this morning. Welcome, gentlemen, and if you can begin by identifying yourselves and then give us your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lee Schmidt.
My name is Kent Gordon, last-minute substitute for Mr. Chuck Hamlin.
Wonderful, Mr. Substitute. Welcome.
I'm a faculty member at Hamlin University School of Education and a member of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association Board of Directors, where I serve as chair of the Legislative and Government Relations Committee. MNSTA is a 30-member board representing a broad spectrum of science educators that all support improvement of science education for all students. Kent Gordon, to my right, is a science teacher at Tartan High School in Oakdale. He's the immediate past president of the Minnesota Earth Science Teachers Association and serves as the legislative liaison for that group. We appreciate the opportunity to speak today on some select issues that face K-12 science education in this state. MNSTA has recently completed a survey of its membership, asking science teachers throughout Minnesota to comment on their concerns. The MNSTA legislative platform that you all received, I hope, yes, outlines four key issues that we would like to bring to the Education Policy Committee today. To begin, I'm going to ask Kent Gordon to speak on a few of these points.
Thank you. My name is Kent Gordon. I'm the immediate past president of the Minnesota Earth Science Teachers Association, an organization that produces quality professional development activities for earth science teachers. Through the years, I've worked at the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching on a wide range of issues from licensure to standards and assessment. But I'm here today to speak as a classroom science teacher. As many of you know, Minnesota has a strong reputation for effective E-12 science education. By independent measures such as the TIM study, Minnesota is nation-leading and internationally competitive. Explanations for Minnesota's success vary, but are often tied to factors such as strong student content standards, rigorous science teacher licensure requirements, and an emphasis on hands-on lab-based instruction. Unfortunately, recent policy changes have put these success factors at risk. I'd like to speak to three areas that need legislative attention: standards implementation, teacher licensure, and laboratory class size. First, revised K-12 standards are moving through the MDE's rulemaking process. Like the legislatively passed science standards of 2004, these rulemaking standards are broad-based and rigorous. Standards, whether they are earth, life, physical, or the history and nature of science and engineering benchmarks, are required for all students across multiple grade levels. This is a strength that does much to promote a basic level of science literacy for all students. However, recent legislation reverses the local implementation flexibility that was present back in 2004. At that time, a district could move a benchmark from one grade to another, say from grade 8 to grade 7, within a band of grades, such as a 6 to 8 grade band. This provided local districts the means to design innovative course requirements to meet all standards for all students while making the best use of local facilities, equipment, and faculty. The law today does not allow this. A grade 8 benchmark must stay in grade 8 regardless of local need. The result is that innovative programs such as integrated multidisciplinary courses or multi-year courses have been abandoned. We recommended that grade banding be revisited, allow the local flexibility and sequence, and continue to require all standards for all students, but bring grade banding back. Second, science teacher licensure. Common sense will tell you that students need instructors who are passionate and well-versed in their subject area. Traditionally, Minnesota science teacher licenses have required coursework in both content and pedagogy. The strength of these licensure requirements has been cited by experts from the U.S. TIMS Research Center, SciMath, and SciMath in their TIMS study analysis. However, recent rulemaking action by the Board of Teaching has watered down licensure requirements. Now science teachers with 3 years' experience may add a license simply by passing a multiple choice test. If they don't pass the test, they can try again and again until they pass. This license by testing approach does little more than define away the highly qualified science teacher shortage. It leaves very little incentive for science teachers to take the challenging content area and pedagogy coursework that has defined Minnesota science teaching licensure excellence. Legislation is needed to reverse this change and develop alternate licensure requirements that are at least as rigorous as existing licensure pathways. Finally, I'd like to add and address classroom size from a personal perspective. I began my teaching career 15 years ago with class sizes of 28. Today, those class sizes are in the 40s. lap tables of 4 students have become lap tables of 6. It's physically difficult to move around the room and interact with students safely. Class sizes have affected student achievement. There are simply too many students that need my help, and it's not possible to get to all of them in time. As class sizes grow, supervision becomes more difficult, and opportunities for student cheating increase. With large lab class sizes, safety becomes an even greater concern, often at the expense of instruction and learning. My colleagues have abandoned difficult labs, packed away the acids and sharps, and curtailed innovative teaching approaches over class size safety concerns. Perpetually increasing class sizes have been compared to a frog in boiling water. In that hypothetical experiment, heat is dialed up incrementally without the frog's recognition until the frog is cooked to death. We are nearing the point where the class size frog needs to be pulled out of the water to survive. If lab course sizes increase anymore, the frog will be cooked, the water will boil away, and the kitchen of educational excellence will be in danger of burning down. Let's reduce lab class sizes to provide students with the best hands-on learning experience. Thank you for listening to my comments. The need for grade band standards, high licensure requirements, and reasonable lab class sizes. We'll be happy to take your questions you may have and do what it takes to support quality science education for all of our students. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon.
Thank you, Kent. Just to add, as our survey results, the number one issue facing science teachers, according to our survey, was overcrowded laboratory situations and overcrowded classrooms. All teachers are carrying increased workload now. We know that. But in science, there's a special challenge because of the laboratory requirements of those classes. And if we're going to provide quality science education, we need to reduce that in some way in science classrooms. The other issue I'll comment on is the grade banding issue, which was commented on often by teachers. Science teachers, especially those in smaller districts, would prefer that the new standards, which MNSTA supports, their rapid adoption, but would prefer that these new standards allow for grade banding in grades K-2, 3-5, and 6-8. Local control for the placement of specific science standards within grade bands would allow districts the flexibility to use their professional judgment to best distribute resources, integrate topics, and meet the needs of their local school population while addressing all the science standards. In order for grade banding of science standards to be allowed, legislative action will be needed, need to be proposed and passed. So in summary, to provide 21st century science education in Minnesota, we need safe, uncongested science classrooms and labs, final approval of the new state science standards, legislative action to allow grade level banding of science standards, and the support of rigorous licensure requirements for science teachers. These four initiatives will allow Minnesota students to receive the quality science education they deserve. We hope to work with you to address these initiatives and improve science education for all of our children. We're happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. And we are fortunate in our state to have a group like Minnesota Science Teachers Association to be able to continue to define for us both the pragmatic, important way in which to deliver education, but also how we can continue to push toward greater quality interactions with students and outcomes as well. I am going to push this along because we have several other testifiers before us. But I look forward to our continued association throughout the rest of this session. And please convey our warm regards to Mr. Hanlon. And hopefully we'll still get him up here from Rochester at a future date. So thank you for being
here.
Thank you. I'm wondering, I think I saw Karen Ephraim. Karen, why don't you come forward, Dr. Ephraim. Welcome, Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ephraim, and I'm here as Director of Government Relations for EdWatch. I appreciate this opportunity to spell out some of our recommendations for education policy this session, and I hope to cover both what we oppose and what we support. Our main concern this year is race to the top. It is a very dangerous and, again, a making bedfellows of groups that you wouldn't expect, because we have very similar concerns to Education Minnesota. This is accepting really a paltry sum of money from the federal government for what is a huge loss of state sovereignty and legislative control. You're basically handing over Minnesota's heritage of strong state control and opposition to federal interference to get what is less than 1 year's funding from the federal government and accepting a national curriculum, which hasn't even been put out yet and which no one has had a chance to look at or comment on. And this is all circumventing the legislative process, both on the federal level and the state level. Race to the Top was put into the federal stimulus bill without any legislative discussion on the federal level, and the decision to apply was done by our state Department of Education without any consultation for you as legislators. So you are basically, if the state accepts this, you are handing over your sovereign authority for something that you don't even know what you're getting. This grant requires that state and local districts agree to implement the standards and assessments of the Common Core Standards Initiative. This will put in place national standards in math and reading developed by the same national non-legislative groups, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, that gave us Goals 2000, which in turn led to the Profile of Learning in Minnesota and No Child Left Behind. To say that the profile was the source of intense academic, legislative, and political controversy in the state would be putting it mildly. Groups on all points of the political spectrum have universally attacked No Child Left Behind. Minnesota's congressional delegation had the highest opposition against it of any state in the nation, and it has been the source of broad bipartisan attempts to remove Minnesota's involvement due to its overarching federal control and unfunded mandates, including a bill unanimously passed by the DFL-controlled Minnesota House as recently as 2008. These standards haven't been developed yet, but their acceptance is required to receive this less than 2% of Minnesota's education budget. The core standards website and the directive for the Race to the Top grant application state that these standards are to be internationally benchmarked. In order to be internationally benchmarked, these standards will have to comply with the only internationally benchmarked standards out there, which are those from the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, and the International Baccalaureate Organization. There are serious questions about both the quality and content of these standards, as well as the expense, but more importantly, IB standards and assessments abrogate and supersede the Minnesota State standards and assessments in every school where they are accepted. These Common Core national standards will do the same to many more schools and districts in this state. Despite the extensive amount of time, energy, money, and controversy already spent on the Minnesota standards process. In addition to those, to the Common Core standards, which are a requirement, there's a number of invitational priorities that include promotion of early childhood programs, longitudinal data systems, and P20 cradle to college government control of all aspects of a citizen's life and work, literally from birth to graduate school. The Head Start National Longitudinal Study just came out a couple of weeks ago and is another of the more than 600 taxpayer-funded studies to show that this program, as well as many other preschool programs, have no longitudinal academic benefit by the first grade. There's evidence of academic and emotional harm, as well as lower test scores for children that are trained and educated in these programs compared to children that are raised at home. The longitudinal data systems are opposed for privacy reasons by conservative groups and liberal groups, such as the teachers union, oppose them as well.
Ms. Heffernan, I'm going to move us along here.
Okay.
Just because we have so many other people.
Well, and I appreciate the opportunity. I will just say that instead we support strong families and the and academic excellence that works, such as phonics, traditional math, balanced science, traditional history, civics, and economics, and advanced placement over international baccalaureate, because they're locally controlled. I have a summary of those issues on this sheet, which I will be happy to pass around.
Please, well, if we can get a page to do that, I'd greatly appreciate it. And Ms. Ephraim, you identified the Common Core initiative that's embedded in the Race to the Top proposal, and I do share your concerns in terms of not, particularly in terms of not, in terms of process as well as content. Content really only having to do with I don't know what's in there yet, and process in terms of you know, part of the expectation of states to be successful participants in R2T is to in fact embrace and adopt the Common Core standards. And there's a bit of a timing issue, members. Of course, the Common Core standards are not yet developed. We are only in session as a legislature through May 18th, 17th. Thank you. I never get that right. And which means we can only officially act between now and May 17th. And so one of the things the chair will be doing is structuring opportunities for us to have some good vetting of whatever is there, quite possibly even convening post our deadline as a committee in order to hear directly from the Department of Education, which of course is the main interface in our state with the development of the Common Core, to see if this committee and this legislature feels that it's properly informed enough to act either in favor or not in favor of adoption of those standards and alignment of state of this state's standards framework with that. It's going to be a challenge, members. It really is, and I would really encourage all members as individuals to find out as much as you can. Don't just depend on this committee and this chair to be able to structure those opportunities, and let's work collegially and effectively together to objectively and properly vet the emergence of those Common Core standards. So thank you, Dr. Ephraim, for your testimony and for raising those issues with us today.
Thank
I'm going to ask Peter Noll. I think I saw Peter earlier. Yes. Peter Noll with the Minnesota Catholic Conference. Peter, if you can come forward. Oh, and while you're doing that, I see that we've got folks that are slightly younger than I am who have entered and are entering the room here today. And I'm wondering, I'm kind of guessing maybe this is part of our, wait a minute, I see a culprit coming forward. Mr. Grathwell, you have something to do with this?
Yes, we'll introduce them in a minute.
Okay, all right, good. I wasn't sure because sometimes we'll have the high school pages and then they kind of come in and go out and the chair doesn't get to call them out, but we'll have a chance to do that. Wonderful. Mr. Noll, good morning.
Morning, Mr.
Good
Chair,
to see
members.
You.
Thank you very much. Pete Noll with the Minnesota Catholic Conference, Education Director, and also Chair of the MNCAPE organization, that's Minnesota Council for American Private Education. Just a couple of comments, Mr. Chair, members, about the coming session. First of all, to acknowledge Minnesota's long reputation for parental choice in education, highly revered around the country, as you well know. And the problem that we've had in recent sessions has been kind of efforts to erode away at parental choice in education, particularly in the area of what we call child benefit aids. That'd be in the area of transportation, textbook aid, health services, etc., but also in the area of special education. These programs actually cost the state of Minnesota relatively moderate amount of money compared with the total K-12 education budget, yet the dividends that are paid back to the state in terms of well-educated citizenry are quite enormous for the return on the dollars. So basically, the downturn in the economy has really hurt particularly parents in non-public schools because they're paying out of pocket. They're paying for most of the expenses to matriculate their children in non-public education from their discretionary funds. And so we want to create that image and make sure that there's a clear understanding that if the children need to be transferred from a private school, non-public school, to a public school, then it becomes a burden on the state, an additional cost to the state of Minnesota. So therefore, we implore you to preserve these programs. These programs are the one thing I think that you can do, members, to help preserve that and sustain parental choice in education. We're a believer in all forms of quality education too, public, charter schools, homeschool, and all forms of non-public, private, parochial schools. So the emphasis there equally on quality K-12 parental choice in education. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members, and I'd stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Noll, and it's been a privilege to work with you over the years.
Likewise.
And with your association, and I appreciate your strong commitment to a good, sound education for our Minnesota young, and that's represented in the schools that you represent. So thank you.
Thank you for your leadership, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, since I had called out Mr. Grathwell, I'm going to call him again, since his name was mentioned. Jim, are you here? And you've got a group that you want to present us with as well. So, good morning.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jim Grathwell. I represent the Minneapolis Public Schools. And as luck would have it, today is Minneapolis School Citywide Student Government's Day at the Capitol. And so you're being joined today by many of the Minneapolis Citywide Student Government leaders. We don't have all the buses here yet. There'll be more coming. But I'd just like the Minneapolis Citywide Student Government leaders to stand up right now. Stand up, wave, say hi. I want the House Education Policy and Oversight Committee to get a chance to look at your future right here in the room. Later today, they will be up in 500 North. If you want to come by and say hi, we'll be debating their own legislative process is going to be how to a bill for an act to fund the perfect pizza party. They will be allocating $100. There'll be House members and Senate members allocating $100 on a variety of delicious and delectable items to spend, and then they'll be conferring that. Then there'll be a surprise announcement from the governor. Then there will be, I'm sure, a successful conclusion. Last year, the governor made an announcement allocating, saying he wanted 30% spent on, I don't know, Pepsi or something. And the governor vetoed, and the legislature overrode that veto. So, I mean, we do a very quick and dirty exercise, but we'll be talking about how great it is that people get to work together and make, solve problems together or not. So this is your future, and I'm going to let you guys sit down. I'm just going to say three things.
Before you do that, let me just make a quick observation, and that is that I don't remember myself and my colleagues being as good-looking as this group was when we were at that age. So please, members, if you can just a brief show of appreciation. Thank you. It's so important for you to be here, and I'm really terribly impressed, and I'm sure all members here are, when we see younger generation of individuals who take this kind of interest in the workings of our democracy and our public decision-making process. It goes to the heart of who we are as a people. It is critically important that we not only learn the process, but that we infuse it with a spirit of hope and creativity and mutual respect for everyone, including those that we don't necessarily agree with. So thank you for being with us today. Mr. Grathwell.
Mr. Chair and members, I failed to announce over here, we have Washburn, we have South, and Patrick Henry is not here, North is not here, South and Southwest here. All right. Anybody? And then, so Patrick Henry North and Wellstone are on the way. So, and Roosevelt's here. And all right, Wellstone is here. All right. So, notice how the rivalries among the Minneapolis high schools. We just set those aside and all come together to the Capitol to watch you do the same. So, thanks for the good work. We expect. So, I'm going to just be very brief. Last time you were faced with a budget situation. Actually, this is more critical than the one you faced in 2003. A number of things happened. I wish there was a Hippocratic Oath for legislators that you would swear, in addition to upholding the Constitution, to do no harm. But I just want to remind you, last time we were in the room in this situation, you know, we 2003, we made cuts to education. We put a five-year cap on ELL. We reduced the amount of revenue available for extended time. We cut comp ed and DSEG. I would encourage you to do no harm this year. You have an OLA report talking about how in alternative schools, extended time is really successful. Who knew? We know that in the more time on task actually works. So that's a key tool, having time for ELL kids to learn the language so then they can get the content. That's a key tool. We have a policy of integration and desegregation. I think you should examine that policy, fine-tune that policy, improve that policy, and continue to fund that policy. We strongly support alternative certification. I think I'll just leave it at that. We want to have every tool available to get great instructors for our students. We think alternative certification is one of those tools. As a matter of fact, the Minneapolis Public Schools Board of Education tonight is probably going to be offering a contract to Bernadia Johnson as our deputy superintendent to be superintendent. She's the product of the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, another alternative certification program. Finally, just looking forward, looking at Race to the Top, looking at reauthorization of NCLB, ESEA, we think our state policy should focus on a model that is more collaborative between charters and school districts. I think over in the Senate, I had the opportunity to testify to the fact that our policy is somewhat confused and muddled on this issue. Sometimes you want us to compete. Sometimes you want us to coerce. I think the sweet spot would be look more towards a collaborative model where school districts work with charters in a manner that doesn't result in open enrollment out of a school district, but working within a school district. I'll leave it at that. Thank you for your time. Thanks for your support of the students in the classroom and in the state of Minnesota. And if anyone wants to come see real legislative action on a $100 pizza party, 500 North is where you want to be a little later today.
Thank you, Mr. Grathwell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again, students, for being with us here today. We're going to push ahead. We have 15 minutes left, and we still have several individuals. Let me ask Mr. Lundell. Schools for Equity and Education to come forward. And let's see, who do we have left here? Mr. Kroonquist and Mr. Aronson, you'll be up shortly afterwards. Oh, okay, got it. All right, very good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education, also do work for the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation and the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. In the Schools for Equity and Education realm, I guess we worked very hard last year as being part of the group that looked at mandate repeal, and we certainly would want to reinvestigate that this year and find ways to streamline the system and look at the ways, look at some of the things that are in law that probably aren't producing the kinds of education outcomes that we're looking for. I think also, even though it's a funding-related bill, Representative Greiling's New Minnesota Miracle is something that we've always been four square behind, and I think that where the policy fits with that, policy questions in the innovation revenue, and we talked, Representative Greiling met with a bunch of us yesterday and talk about the differences between the race to the top and the innovation revenue that's included in that bill, and I think where the twain meets with those two programs is fertile ground for the discussion as to what we want Minnesota's education system to look like, whether that should be something that comes from the grassroots up or the top down. And I think that there's very good food for thought contained in that bill. I would also say from the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, we have some minor cleanup items that were contained in the House bill last year that we'll also we hope we can revisit again this year. It's certainly nothing earth-shattering there. From the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, I would say that there's some language that was part of the bill that Representative Newton and Senator Fobey put together last year, looking at differences between state and federal and where some of the things that need to be in place. We've got some language. We're working with the advocates to make sure that that is not controversial. We're certainly not looking for a tug of war this year, given the time constraints and the money constraints. But back to our major message would be look for ways to streamline the system, to find things that are in place that are nice things to do but not necessary things to do. We all want to do what's best for kids. We all want to have higher learning, higher levels of learning, and to make sure that that happens. But to do that in the most, we're looking for efficacy, which is efficiency and effectiveness. And I think that those are the kinds of things that we're willing to jump in and look at this year. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. You have a very full plate, as do we, and we look forward to working with you. Next, we have AMSD, and my understanding is AMSD, MASA, and MSBA will all be joining together in this next brief testimony. Pardon? So, good morning. We're basically about 13 minutes away, so and I think I still have one or two others I'd like to call forward. So,
thank you.
Oh no, we need a chair. Why don't you start us off, Mr.
Okay.
Kroonquist?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I do have a couple handouts. If could have a page, maybe help with that. I will try to not duplicate what's already been talked about, although I do have to reiterate one point that you've already heard, and that is our 38-member school districts in the 7-county metro area laid off 900 staff this school year. And so we hope it's just kind of a foregone conclusion that we won't be enacting new unfunded mandates. We already have fewer people, and as you all know, the work doesn't go away. The same amount of work needs to be done, but now people are doubling up, tripling up, taking on added duties to do it. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we really hope that unfunded mandates are not on the agenda this year for the legislature. Coming around is a position paper that our AMSD board just adopted on integration revenue. And as you all know, this has been a topic that's been under discussion for several years. And there was especially a lot of discussion this last year. Representative Newton and Representative Brown chaired a subcommittee that looked at it over the interim. I think a lot of great information was gathered in that process. And we knew that it was going to be a topic of discussion, so we sat down, our legislative committee at AMSD sat down to draft a position paper. And after hours of discussion, we really came to the conclusion that we need a task force to do further work. Because I think a lot of the discussion so far has been centered around the integration revenue program. And we think we really have to back up a step and look at the desegregation rule first. Because the integration revenue program should follow the rule. And we think we have a rule that no longer fits with Minnesota. Minnesota has, the demographics have changed dramatically since that rule was enacted. School choice laws and the integration rule oftentimes just
butt heads. And so we think we need a, we would propose that it would be a education stakeholder and legislative task force that would work together to really sort through some of these challenging issues and figure out, first of all, is integration still a priority for Minnesota? Do we still think that integrated learning environments are important? And then if so, what, how do we need to change current rule and law to make things work? The final thing I'll just mention, Mr. Chairman, is something that we have worked with you on, and we certainly appreciate your support, but that is we continue to really think an education research center would be beneficial to the state, especially would be beneficial to legislators. We know it's a challenge to try to get something like that up and running, given the budget challenges. At the same time, we probably need it now more than ever. With limited resources, you as policymakers need to know what are the most effective practices to invest in. And if you don't have the research available to turn to tell you that, it makes your job that much more difficult. So I will stop there and let my colleagues jump in. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Ms. Kelleher or Ms. Dosland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosland, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And we just want to acknowledge the very difficult task that all of you have ahead of you. And we are happy and more than willing to be able to provide as a resource and answer any questions that you might have. All of you should have received the MESA legislative platform in the mail. If you have not, I'm happy to bring it to you. But just to be brief, generally, as Jim Grathwell said, our goal is to prevent no harm. We would not support any new mandates unless that they were funded, and we would like more flexibility to allow school districts to do the very important work of educating our students.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be in front of you. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent school board members from around the state. Thank you for giving me this time to sort of lay out our feelings for this year's legislative session. And the piece that we are wrestling with locally is the $1.2 billion budget hole that you are facing coming forward and what that might look like for school districts. And we have continually, at least this last year, felt like we've run from one black hole to another black hole and with really no thought of how this impacts us at the local level and how to get there. So we too are asking you to, this is not the year to do mandates or additional rules for school districts, but in fact you assist us in finding flexibility at the local level to meet student needs. We also want to share that we believe this process we're going through is a little bit like education triage. And we are still bleeding and feel that though the recession technically by some economists might be said to be over, we are facing a human recession going right now in our public schools. And we really need your thought and forethought. And we understand that lots of bills can look great and sound great and can provide good things for kids, but we want you to be wise and prudent. And when you look at those programs against our serious financial issues, those programs can be a fiscally toxic combination for local school districts. So we ask that you keep that in front of you this year, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Look forward to working with you this year, and you, I think, properly kind of soberly got us focused on one of the obviously major challenges we have, regardless of whether it's education or anything else in our society. And I hope that these sort of crisis times will really evoke the best of who we are as legislators across the aisle in working mutually and respectfully toward good positive outcomes that bring out the best ideas that we have. And so we look forward to working with you in that. Roger Aronson, I think, is unless Mary Ciccone is here, is the only other person. And so I'm going to have Roger come forward. And Roger, we're about 5 minutes
Well, Mr. Chairman, I assume that your selection of the order here was entirely random.
Well, Mr. Harrison, I always choose the best for last. So,
Mr. Grathwall has arranged to have the children stand up and leave while I'm talking. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Roger Ernst, and I represent the secondary school principals, the elementary school principals, and the high school league. I have 1,700 school principals around Minnesota. I want to say that just in the short couple minutes here, a couple things. If you have questions about school principals, where we are on issues or input from us, call us. And the same is true with the Minnesota State High School League. If you have questions about how we do things, interest in changes, that sort of thing, call us. We're here to visit about those things. I want to say that I think the agenda piece that you handed out is critically important to school principals right now. Mr. Chair, you indicated, you know, about being a parochial local legislator. The best part about the policy piece in Minnesota education is we can come to this committee and talk about it. That everybody that's at this table is from Minnesota. They know their local schools. There is concern that people who've never been to Minnesota on the federal level are setting policy about how we manage the evaluation of our teachers, how we hire or fire school principals, and what we're doing with curriculum. That concerns us a lot. And we're having a lot of talk about that right now. We just finished two conferences, the elementary and the secondary conferences. We had 350 elementary principals in last week to talk about these issues. One of the speakers referred to Race to the Top as Sprint for the Money. The lure of federal cash makes us do some strange things from time to time. We've had a good relationship working with the department on these questions, but we want to keep as many of the education issues here in this committee, in this legislature, in this state. And we'll continue to talk to you, you know, about those as they come forward. Mr. Chair, and just to echo what some of the other folks have said as well, and you know this, I mean, we're certainly not interested in additional mandates. There are a lot of things that are going on in our schools right now, too, though, that are problematic for us on resources and how that drives policy and how that affects decisions here. I do want to say that when the day is done, we have over 800,000 kids that come to our schools. We do a very good job with them. What I like to remind the school principals of, and a lot of you know this, but in the business setting, if you lose some of your stock, if you can find most of it, if Best Buy can locate 98% of their television sets on any given day, I'm sure their managers get an award. In that model, we should, you know, maybe be able to lose 200-300 kids a year, and you know, we'd be doing real well. But that's not the standard that we're held to. We try to work with every single one of them and account for every single one of them. And people do that every day. They're long days. They work hard at it. They're committed. It's a challenge, and it's a new group that starts every year. You know, we need your help doing that in thoughtful policy, and frankly, that we keep a very open discussion about this. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. And you properly have identified how in Minnesota, probably the highest standard we hold as Minnesotans is for high-quality, equal outcomes, academic solid outcomes for every K-12 student in Minnesota. It is a tough standard to meet, but we rise to that challenge, and we look forward to working with you and others toward doing that. Quickly, Mr. Grathwell, some more high school students came in, maybe just 15 seconds.
North High School, Edison High School, well,
wonderful. Thank you for being here. Members, we have minutes of April 7th, May 27th, January 6th, and January 19th. Representative Kath, would you be so kind as to move those minutes?
Move those.
Well, minutes have been moved. Discussion members, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Members, once again, I did share a memo with you. We don't really have time to get into this, and unfortunately we don't have time to have the discussion I had hoped we would have, but hopefully we will do that shortly again in an upcoming meeting. We are meeting again. We're not meeting tomorrow, obviously. We are going to meet on Thursday. We actually have a bill up on Thursday, a Representative Dabney bill, and then we also have a presentation from SciMath and discussion on our science standards. Look at my memo, even if just briefly, and feel free to call me, email me, or whatever if I've missed something in terms of what you think we ought to be looking at, prioritizing, or thinking about in particular. Let me know as soon as possible. With that, members, thank you so much for braving the winter weather to be here early this morning. Look forward to seeing you all on Thursday morning. Until then, this committee stands adjourned.